everybody. Welcome back. Thank you very much for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin. I am back again here with Dom. Dom, how are you?
I'm doing well, but I mean, don't take this the wrong way, but I'll be very happy when all of this is finally over, because it feels like we have been putting this off for so long. We thought that this was going to be all said and done like last week when we put out part three of this, and then that took so long that we had to delay until part four, and then it took us like four separate tries to get this going. So we seem to be finally here, like on the precipice, but I'm not counting my chickens just yet.
Well, okay, so we started the Genius 3 coverage all the way back, if you can believe it, in January 2016. But Dom, I don't know, I think, for me at least, I have been wary of closing the book on the Genius. I don't like that these are the last two Genius episodes we ever have to podcast about.
Yeah, I'm sure we can find an excuse to talk about it in some other context, but it is weird to, like, I mean, so I first discovered the Genius, I think it was January of 2015, so like it's over 2 years ago now, which is a terrifying thought, and we're just now finally putting an end to the entire franchise. So it's been an amazing experience, just getting to discover the show and then spread the show and see everyone else fall in love with it too, and then be able to watch season four in real time and be able to podcast about it. So I mean, the whole thing has been great, and it does feel weird that it's finally coming to an end in one sense.
Yeah, all right, well, today we are here to do just that, and before we get into all of that, we of course need to issue the spoiler alert warning. We will be closing the book on the Genius 3. I certainly hope that if you have listened to our podcast through this point about the Genius 3, you have seen the entire season, because we have been spoiling all of the results from it the entire way along. But nothing from Genius 4, and that is going to be the case again today. We will, of course, talk through these final two episodes. We will talk a little bit about who's going to be back for Genius 4, but certainly nothing as far as like Genius 4 results will be gotten into. But today we will be just closing the book on Genius 3 and an incredible season of reality TV. And as I start all of these Genius podcasts, this will be no different. I will once again flag up, if you haven't rewatched these episodes, I really, really strongly recommending all of the Genius. It's so, so fun. And you will absolutely pick up on a ton of stuff that you will have missed the first or second time through.
And in the case of doubting you, Nori, you probably need to rewatch it again just to understand it for the first time, because it's kind of a tough thing to follow the first time around. And then, of course, the finale, which if you haven't gone back and rewatched it for any reason, then I would highly suggest doing it, because it's just a fantastic episode through and through. And it's really, I mean, so like, the season one finale was okay. I mean, it was the end of a great first season of The Genius, but it wasn't anything special in its own right, I don't think. And then the season two finale, I mean, I loved it because I love Sangmin, I loved Yeowan. But again, it was just, you know, three games. The games themselves weren't that great, and it was just kind of a generic episode, actually. But then this finale was legitimately great, I thought. You know, one of the best, certainly the best finale and one of the best episodes overall.
Right, and I think a big piece of that is because of the stakes. We've watched Dongmin and Hyunmin throughout the course of this season basically be the stars of the show and the deciding factor in most of the main matches.
Yeah, and looking at the matchups that we had previously, so Jinho versus Kyungran, they were both big characters in the season, but they were never, like, it was never special because it was Jinho versus Kyungran, and I think a lot of people were hoping that Sangmin would replace one of them in that finals there. Then season two, we did get Sangmin in the finals versus Yeowan, and the two of them had like this weird antagonistic relationship, kind of, and it was an interesting pairing because you know, Yeowan is someone who in theory excels at 1v1, and he just kind of got to the finals through this very strange route, versus Sangmin, who took the exact opposite route, just crushing every single main match. So seeing that study in contrast was really fun. But again, the two of them weren't explicitly linked in the same way. But here, like, for the first time, as the voiceover notes, both here and previously when this deal was first brought up, this is like the first open, like, final two agreement, this first open pairing that really does succeed and make it all the way to the end. And it's, you know, regardless of whether you're actually rooting for Hyunmin or Dongmin, it's fun to see the two of them actually square off in the finals.
Yeah, so definitely a lot to say once we get to the finals, but we do want to get through episode 11, which I think is still a really fun episode, in Doubting Yoot Nori. So just to reset people, last time we talked, I guess, we just had episode 10, which was fantastic, where Jinho and Sangmin came back. Hyunmin figured out that great solution with the division sign to get a perfect 10, and then we lost Yeonju after the fantastic monorail death match. We are now down to our final three of Dongmin, Hyunmin, and Yeonsung, and again we start with an opening montage to like jack up the audience about what a great trio this is, and like, what combination do you want to see make the finals, Dom? Like, I don't know. What, I'm sure a lot of people out there were rooting for the Hyunmin and Dr. Yeonsung. It seems like kind of a yeah, patronizing question to ask, almost.
And when they put those three relationships side by side, it really does hit home, like, just how important this pairing has been to the season. Because with, like, Dongmin and Yunsung is, okay, like, Yunsung to pick Sujin for the main match, and Dongmin was mad about that, or he lied to him a few times in the games, and it's like, oh, okay, whatever. But it felt very contrived. And same way with Hyunmin and Yunsung too. And then Dongmin versus Hyunmin, like, that could be the opening montage by itself. And of course, in episode 12, it actually is, and it's fantastic when that finally comes.
Right. Well, the thing for me was, like, I'm pretty sure when I saw that the first time, I was thinking to myself, of course I want to see it be Dongmin against Hyunmin in the finals, but. One of the criticisms I hear lodged about this season is, oh, it's so obvious it's going to be the two of them showing down in the finals because they're clearly the focal points. For me, seeing like something like that montage the first time around, or even like the final four montage that we talked about last podcast, it got me, I think, thinking, like doubting myself. Like, oh, do they think that Dongmin versus Yunsung would actually be an equally compelling showdown in the finals? Maybe I'm the one who's like, I didn't think I was crazy by any stretch for rooting for specifically Dongmin and Hyunmin, but I definitely didn't think at any point that it was a foregone conclusion that it had to be the two of them.
Well, and also it's obvious after the fact when you know that it is the two of them in the finals. Right. I don't think in real time at any point it was actually overwhelmingly obvious, because we knew that Dongmin was a big character, we knew that Hyunmin was a big character, but first of all, so the show is filmed like 6 or 7 weeks in advance. So when we watch the first two episodes and we see that Dongmin is this great character, we see that Hyunmin is this great character, maybe that's a sign, if you want to read into that, that they're there in like the mid to late game. That's not a spoiler that they're in the finals, though, because that literally hasn't happened yet at that point. So
right.
It's not like they're all working backwards from this end game conclusion. And then secondly, like, in the sense that this was a likely outcome, which I think it was, that's just because Dongmin and Hyunmin are the two best players there by a pretty decent margin, I think, and they're both very, very skilled at the game. And that's the point of the show. You want to see the two best players, the two people who most fit that label of geniuses, square off in the end, because that's the whole premise. That's what the producers, I'm sure, were hoping for the whole time.
Yeah.
And that's what we got. So, like, if it had been Hyunmin takes a fluke loss to Yunsung in a deathmatch this episode, and then it's him versus Dongmin in the finals, okay, that would be interesting, and that would be surprising, it would be a blindside, but I don't think the actual result would be that much more entertaining.
Right. Well, I mean, I remember saying when we talked about the Constellation game where they got frozen out, if one of them had ended up leaving that week, I don't think we would have seen a much different story about the Minor game or the Stormy Stock Market, where they were like the power duo that completely dominated the entire main match. I still think we get that fully presented as them being this power couple, and then we just see it fall apart in the Constellation game.
And there are lots of points where one thing goes differently and the whole season after that point changes. So, you know, going into the final five death match, when we heard it was Memory Maze, I was not expecting for one second that Yuhyun would lose to Yondu there. Like, if you had me bet money on that, I would be a broke man right now, because that came as a blindside. And I was expecting that, like, Yuhyun would have to square off with Hyunmin at some point. That was going to be this great clash of the titans. And then the very next episode, like, Dongmin is one terrible mistake in either direction from either player away from just going home at that point. And like, that again, that would have destroyed anyone's predictions to what the season was going to be. So like, I'm not sure at what point this was meant to be a foregone conclusion. And we know that the structure of the genius, and one thing that makes the show so great, is that you just don't have any of those foregone conclusions.
Right. I mean, the players couldn't make it a foregone conclusion even if they wanted to. Like, entering the final four, we talked about how crucial it was that no matter what happened in that game, there was only going to be one token of life. We saw Dongmin have to go to the death match, and there was nothing Hyunmin could have done to save him. Clearly, there was nothing Hyunmin could do to get him from playing moves that would like ultimately lose him the game once Yeonju caught onto them. And it was just a phenomenal bluff that got him out of that spot. And then certainly at this final three scenario, one of them is definitely going, at least one of them is definitely going to the death match. So it's not like Survivor, where you can get something like Kim and Chelsea or whatever, and as long as they want to stay loyal to each other, there's nothing anyone can really do about it. So yeah, I think that's definitely one of many, many things that makes the genius, the game design, so superior. It just goes back to that, just the numbers and having loyalty being not at all the determining factor. It really comes down to merit and actually being able to beat people at stuff.
Yeah, so 10 minutes later, let's get back to doubting Yukinori, which it's fitting that in this episode, this is going to be mostly sidelined, because first of all, it's just not the finale, but also it's kind of a weird episode with a weird game, and I think I think actually this is like the one game you could have had at Final Three that it would have taken to get Heung-min to the deathmatch here. Because not to undersell Dongmin by any means, but you get the sense of like Heung-min felt kind of screwed over by the fact that this wasn't a game that you could win on your own merits. And if Kyung-hoon wants to come in and ruin the entire game, then he can do that. And sure enough, that's what happens.
Right. The way this works is we have four. This is the revenge match, as it's become known, where former players from that season get to come back and play against the people who are still alive. And in that case, it means we're going to have four guests come play a game of America's game, Tactical Yutenori, against each other. And those four guests are going to be Hui Jong, Kyung-hoon, Yu Yun, and Ah Young. And it's, by the way, a great group, I would say, a really fun group to bring back if you're going to bring a group of people back.
Yeah, and I love that Hui Jong is there specifically. Like, he is becoming the Aussie of the genius at this point. Just like, always, just like somehow managing to lose every single game multiple times in the same season. And in one sense, I'm just sad that he wasn't invited back for season four, because it would almost be like, even he would have to realize at that point that he just wasn't really that good at this, despite all of his bluster and bravado. And he would have like internalized that and been even more like hyper aggressive and trying to mess everything up and doing really badly at it.
Right. I remember when I was rewatching this episode the other day, I said to you off air, I was like, you know what? As much as I think it's like air quotes right or whatever that means for Jinho and Sangmin to be the only three timers on the Genius, I wouldn't have minded having Hui Jong back for Genius 4. He's really fun. And you said, yeah, it would have been great for three episodes.
Right, you know that it's not going to last, right? Especially in a cast where everyone else actually is legitimately good. But, you know, you need people like that to kind of mess things up, and who better than Hui Jong?
Right. Well, I guess the person that they decided to be who better than Hui Jong was Kyung-hoon. Yeah, I guess more on that on Genius 4. But yeah, Kyung-hoon is there, Yu-yun is there, and Ah-young is there. And so, yeah, I'm really, really happy about this and the way this is going to go about this group of people. I'm really excited to see all these people back. And the way this works is those four guests are going to play a game of Tactical Yutenori against each other, while the three Genius players, each of them is going to draw a secret partner and then bet on who does on the order that people cross the finish line in the game of Tactical Yutenori. And for as many years at this point as we have been podcasting about the Genius, I still have a very loose knowledge of how Tactical Yutenori even works.
Right. And I think this is just our fault as people who are not Korean and who haven't grown up with Yutenori, which I'm led to understand is like an actual thing in Korea.
It seems that way.
Is that even true, though?
It seems like everyone it seems like tic-tac-toe of Korea. It seems like everyone there just automatically is assumed you will know the rules of this game.
Yeah, it seems like a very high variance game, and specifically like having to rely on your partner doing well. Like if you draw, so I think if you had people rank the partners that they would prefer to have, it would have to be Yu-Yun at the top, right? Just like all ungodly luck aside, you know, just thinking about who is going to be able to calculate the odds the best and kind of know when to bluff and how to sell that bluff when he makes it and so on. Like, he's clearly the guy that you want. And then maybe, like, Hui Jong and Ah-young and Kyung-hoon fighting it out for a close second place.
I think it's blatantly Ah-young is my number two pick, I would say.
Which is kind of scary in a way, right? Like, if Ah-young is your trusted partner and she is somehow not the worst option, then you know, you're kind of at the bottom of the barrel. But it's so already you have this like high variance thing where like if you draw Yu-Yun as your partner, you have a much higher chance to win, I would say. And that's going to be true, I think, regardless of who those four people actually are. So if you swap out Hui Jong for, I don't know, insert somebody's name there, then you still have that problem. And that's an element of variance in the game that you can't control. And then secondly, the game itself is just high variance. So even if you have this element of skill where like you can lie and say that you actually rolled a better outcome than you did, there's still a kind of limit to the plausibility of that. And we see this when Yu-Yun just goes on this amazing run towards the end. And like people are saying, well, we really want to doubt him, but would he really be lying at like the sixth time he gets the perfect roll? That would be so unrealistic.
Right.
It almost has to be realistic. It's, yeah. But like you can tell, as I said, so Heung-min realizes that this is not a game where his like tactical or mathematical edge over the competition is actually going to matter all that much.
Right, exactly. And the way it works is, Dom referenced the die. Instead of Ute sticks that we typically see people using to play Tactical Yutenori, they're going to roll a 10-sided die, these guest players. to move their pieces around. And then once they roll it, only they can see what they actually rolled, what their move is supposed to be. And two of the sides actually are busts where they're not legally allowed to like move whatever, but they can lie and say they rolled whatever they wanted. And then it would take one of the genius players doubting them and risking a garnet for them to get to, for basically their bluff to be called. And so it adds a really interesting dynamic when after each genius player draws their secret partner, I actually kind of don't like this rule. They are only allowed to bet on that person to be the ultimate victor. And I think that's kind of a potential flaw in this game.
And already that constrains what you can do. So if you draw a partner that you're not happy with, like, you don't want to bet too much, because if it goes as you expect, then you're just going to lose those garnets. But equally, if you want to be the one person who wins this game out of the three genius contestants, you probably need to jump ahead in garnets. And the easiest way to do that is to bet on your partner and have them do well. So you're kind of caught in this difficult situation there.
Right. And I guess we should flag up now that is going to be the determining factor. And fortunately, we have a really tight race in garnets entering this episode, with Dr. Yansung at 29, Dongmin at 28, and Hyunmin at 27. But Dominic, this is our first ever garnet match, which becomes a recurring twist on season 4. But it just comes down to whoever has the most garnets at the end of this match is the winner, and we'll get the safety into the finals.
Yeah, that's right. And just to continue from what you said a minute ago, imagine if you were able to bet on someone else's partner. You'd have this really interesting dynamic spring up where, like, if someone is secretly striking a deal with your partner, like if Hyunmin goes to Kyunghoon, let's say, and like strikes some kind of secret deal with him, and then, you know, you have your own partner is secretly working with one of your competitors, but then maybe you just read too much into that and you kind of suspect your partner when actually they're trying to help you, and then like you want to doubt your own partner, but you can't do that, and you just have so much leveling going on. But instead it reduces to a fairly straightforward game, which doesn't really make for good TV.
Right, like we do end up seeing Hyunmin right away is the only one whose partner we're shown, where he draws Kyunghoon as his partner and immediately like sighs and is disappointed in his draw. But we see later on, like, there comes a scenario where Hyunmin wants, you know, you're forced to bet between 1 and 5 garnets on your partner, and he bets 1 on Kyunghoon, just, I think, with good reason, not really being fully confident that Kyunghoon is going to come through for him here. And as it's a race to see who finishes first, Kyunghoon lies and finishes, and Hyunmin is the one who calls bullshit on him because he had bet on the side on someone. Like, you can bet on other people's partners for who's going to be the next to finish. And so Kyunghoon, his own partner, he ended up setting back in his goal of winning the long game because he knew that was not worthwhile at all. He needed to gain the garnets by winning in the short game, and Kyunghoon, his own partner, finishing was detrimental to that. It's a really weird scenario.
Yeah, and you have 3 genius contestants and 4 genius alumni who are coming in as potential partners. So you know that one of those is going to be the odd man or odd woman out, and they can do whatever they want, essentially. They can kind of lie to people about who their partner is. They can try and like undermine the other genius alumni. They can do whatever they want to do in the service of them winning. And in theory, it could be like what you get in Werewolf sometimes, where everyone wants to claim that they are in a certain role. So I was wondering, like, surely everyone would want to claim that they're the one either who is partnered up with a specific person or is the guy who doesn't have a partner and who is essentially a free agent. And you could have people like claiming and counterclaiming roles and just doing lots of weird stuff.
Well, I think the thing is, the way it works is the genius players all draw a card and they find out their own partner, but even the guests don't know who drew them. The genius players have to convince them, yes, you are my partner, I had to bet on you, I do have, and maybe that's why they force them to only be able to bet on their partner, to add in that extra social dynamic of like, he didn't have a choice of bet. We've seen in guest games before, like Sangmin, the guests show up in season 2 and they're all friends with Sangmin and they just help him. I guess that this is kind of preventing against that, where you do force the players to play into something that they can't just pick themselves, I guess. But at the end of the day, I think this potentially could have been a lot more interesting if there was no secret partner kind of dynamic to it at all, and they were just merely betting on this game being played by these guests. Because again, this die, despite what Yuyun is able to do with it later, there is no trick to the die. This is a very, in theory, highly a game with tons and tons of variance in it.
Well, okay, so officially, there was no trick to the die. However, I think going into the game, you might expect that there's going to be some kind of trick to it, right? Like, it wouldn't shock you if there was. And then towards the end, when Yuyun does go on this incredible run, would you start to think that maybe there was a trick and that he had figured it out and you hadn't?
Right. We see as soon as he wins the game and crosses, he gets 6 consecutive turns because he keeps rolling the right thing that gets him bonus turns and keeps, you know, sliding him all the way around the board. The very first thing they do as soon as it's over is Hyunmin and Kyunghoon go right over to the dice box and say, "We can look at this, right? Like, what's the trick? Like, how is this working?"
And the area where you roll the dice is covered, so you roll the die and then you get to peek inside and see what it is. And so in theory, it's not like anyone else can see what motion you're making with your hand, or like if the die is actually rolling a certain way, or if there's some kind of aspect to it that you wouldn't expect to be there in a fair game.
Right. And I guess we should just quickly go over the different ways of gaining and losing garnets. I've mentioned that you can doubt one of the guests as they make their move. If you think they're lying about what they rolled, if you're right, you take a garnet off of the dealer table. And if you're wrong, you put another garnet onto the dealer table. And then that dealer table is the prize that the guests are playing for, up to $10,000. And then the ways that the genius players can bet is betting on which person's piece will finish next. And that one you can bet on any of the 4 guests, a minimum of 1 garnet, a maximum of 5. And then the second one is you must bet between 1 and 5 on your secret partner initially, or between 1 and 10, excuse me, on your secret partner, and that will pay 2 to 1. So in the world where you draw, like, I guess maybe Yon Sung draws Yu Yun and feels really good that they can work together, that could be a really big way of gaining a lot of garnets near the end. But as we go on to see, all 3 of them bet 1 garnet on their secret partner, the bare minimum on their secret partner.
So if you weren't confident in your own abilities in this game, insofar as they matter, but you were confident in your partner, is there an argument to just shove on your partner, put 10 garnets on them, and just hope that that comes through?
I mean, I guess if you were really thinking about it and, like, say you're Yeonju making it to this round and you draw, like, Yu Yun or the person that you think is going to be the favorite to win the thing, and you feel like that's your only realistic hope is Yu Yun basically playing your way into the token of life, if this was something that would even go through Yanju's mind if she was there at Final 3, then yeah, I think that is definitely defensible. But the problem is, there are 4 people playing, and you're only getting paid 2 to 1, so the math definitely does not. They'd have to have a very sizable edge over the rest of the field for that to be plus EV. Although I do think, like, we've certainly seen people go deep in Seasons of the Genius that would probably benefit from just jamming all in a high variance scenario like this for a free shot to the finals. And I think Yeonju would definitely be someone who would qualify for that. So I think that's not a bad idea. So let's get into this just as the game starts playing out, where quickly we see a lot of people realize, Yon Sung realizes this while talking to Yu Yun, and then Dongmin and Hui Jong come to the same conclusion. Doubting pretty aggressively is probably a pretty good idea here, because if you doubt someone, they only get 6 pieces to play with, and if they get doubted correctly, that piece is just evaporated and can never be used again. So theoretically, someone could run out of pieces, but also just letting someone get away with a huge bluff, the swing is just way too tremendous, I would imagine, and letting them get away with, like, a critically timed going from one crucial spot to the next, or bumping your piece off without getting doubted, I think is just basically never going to be allowed to happen.
And if you correctly doubt their move, then that erases of maybe 4 or 5 times worth of progress on their part. So that really sets them back a lot. And if you're heavily relying on your partner winning, but your partner's in second place, like, that could be the difference. Like, doubting correctly is the difference between winning and losing the entire match, potentially.
Yeah. Let's get into just quickly these guests and how this plays out as they're trying to figure out who their partners are, because we see Hyunmin immediately goes to Kyunghoon, and I wanted to get your take on that, where he says, yes, he says, "Who do you hope is your partner?" And Kyunghoon says, "I hope it's you." And he says, "Good news, buddy, it's me." Are you on board with giving Kyunghoon that kind of vital information right away? Because part of me feels like that's a huge risk, but another part of me feels like maybe you want to show that you super trust him and you're definitely good friends and he shouldn't have any bad feelings towards you.
So in theory, right, you know that Kyunghoon is so erratic, based on the 2 episodes you've seen of him so far, that if he doesn't have a reason to trust you, he's just going to go haywire and lie to you whenever he needs to. He's going to lie to you when he doesn't need to, just for the hell of it. He's going to just be entirely unpredictable. So I can understand, given that he is your partner, you want to get him on your side and try and exercise some control over that and try and rein him in a bit. Equally, though, I don't know if you can trust him to be responsible with that information, because he, like, right, you tell him that you're that he's your partner, first of all, he might just not believe you, and then he thinks, well, this guy's lying to me, so I'm going to exact vengeance on him somehow. Or even if he does believe you, there's no guarantee he's going to act on that in a way that actually furthers your own interest. So drawing Kyung-hoon is a really unfortunate situation, I think, for Hyunmin, and it might be best to just not even reveal that and just let him do his thing and hope that somehow it doesn't go haywire.
Right. I really don't know where to draw the line there, like which side I would end up falling on. I think it's probably pretty risky to go to Kyung-hoon later in the game, just cause, like, the concern I flagged up initially, which was, if it comes down to a critical decision and you suddenly go and say, oh, wait, I've been your partner this whole time, I bet a ton on you, I think he would be the type who would say, well, where was this, for the first three quarters of the game? Why would I have any reason to believe you? You've been off talking with other people. That, I think, is a scenario that I'm not interested in, where he should potentially even want to be helping me because I do have his best interest at heart, and he still is unwilling. Because, like, I think that's a very in-play scenario, so that would at least concern me. But let's get into Huijong is the person who ultimately is without a partner here, and I'm curious what you think about being that person, because we've talked about the kind of the incentive that each guest has, or each player has, in making it clear to their guest that they are their partner. Like, if Hyunmin tells Kyung-hoon, oh, it's definitely you, he potentially loses the ability later on, if he needs Ah-young's help, to go to Ah-young and say, hey, by the way, we're partners, you should help me. What do you think about being that odd person out, the Huijong in this case, where he seemed to realize eventually, if not pretty quickly, that he was the one without the partner? Because I thought he had a pretty good plan here, where he said, none of these genius players are going to be reliably able to get their own partner to necessarily finish first. So the next best thing for them is if the person without a partner wins.
Yeah. So there are kind of two things at work here. So you have the genius players, all of whom are hoping that they're going to have the most guidance at the end. And then you have the genius helpers, if you like, who are just trying to finish first so that they can claim the individual prize. And those two sets of interests don't necessarily align that much. And that's part of the fun behind this game and also behind the chain auction. And in this game, it's a lot more explicit. So you have a partner, but that partner can cheerfully just throw you underneath the bus if that means that they themselves can satisfy their win condition.
Right.
So it's almost liberating in a way not to even have to feel that obligation in the first place. Like, you can just play however you want. And if that means you need to, like, screw over your partner and then screw over someone else at the same time or whatever, like, you can do that, and there's no potential consequences.
Right. I think what it would come down to for me is I would probably at least be in the moment talking myself into that same math that Huijong was doing, which is everyone's second best case scenario is the neutral person winning, and how confident can they be in their best case scenario coming in?
Yeah, especially if your partner is Kyung-hoon or Ah-young even. Like, I know Huijong did not exactly acquit himself well in this season, but it is weird because coming in, like, the genius voiceover explicitly says in the finale, like, Huijong is one of the most feared players, and I think some of the promotional material for the season said that Huijong was, like, the favorite to win. And I think part of that is just him being a returning player, but he also, whether because of his just world historical wolfiness or just because, you know, he's like a math tutor or whatever, he does seem to have this reputation as this fearsome competitor. So I guess if you think, as Huijong, everybody else would rather have you on their side than going against you, then maybe it does make sense to think that. In practice, however, Huijong takes this as an excuse to just lie to everyone, and everyone sees through it, and no one even believes him or takes him seriously. So
yeah, they do some really interesting negotiating where Huijong essentially goes to each of the genius players and tells him, okay, so Kyung-hoon's going to finish first, and then I'll finish second and third so that I'll win the overall match and I'll take the money. It seems like he has decided that that's the way the pieces are going to finish, and thus all of the genius players should be on board with that as well. Are you clear on how all of that came to be, or was he just kind of...
Absolutely not. I have no idea whatsoever.
I didn't know what I missed, or if I just didn't understand Yutnori well enough, or what?
Well, I was thinking I just didn't understand Yutnori well enough.
I was thinking, do I not understand dice well enough? Like, how do you know you're going to be the first one who's going to finish?
do I understand algebra or math at all? Like, what's going on? But I think the thing is, Huijong kind of said, okay, I'm going to finish first ultimately, so you therefore should just get behind me and fall in line. And he left it to them to fill in the blanks as to why it makes sense for them like why it's compatible with our own strategy. But as we said, the two sets of incentives don't really cross over that well. So like I can buy the argument that Hui Zhong might finish second, or that he or whatever Hui Zhong is right in what he's saying. But what does that mean for me? Like, why should I therefore do a certain action? And we see no attempt by Hui Zhong to like spell out explicitly, okay, Dongmin, I'm going to finish in this position. Therefore, that means if you don't bet on me, you're going to lose X garnets, and then Y garnets are going to go this way. And so, like, he just relied too much on inspiring fear in the other contestants, and that would somehow all lead to them just doing what he wanted.
I think, actually, I'm now remembering him saying, no one's going to doubt me. I think he thought that they wouldn't risk doubting someone that they didn't have a vested interest in stopping.
Well, that can't be true for everybody, right? Like, if you're
eventually, they'd start doubting him, yeah.
Yeah. But like if you're in last place and you just need garnets, then right. Okay, you're just going to start doubting, because what do you have to lose? So like I can see that working out well at the start, but then you have to be very careful in adjusting that as the game goes forward. Not a careful player in general, and in this game certainly he just wasn't really doing that. He wasn't aware of what was going on.
Yeah. So the way that this first round goes is Hyunmin bets 5 on Hui Zhong to be the first one to finish, and he's trying to talk Kyunghoon into not finishing first so that he can win that bet. And that is the scenario that I flagged up earlier, where Kyunghoon bluffs his way across the finish line because Dongmin had bet on him. But Hyunmin knows that if Kyunghoon ends up actually being allowed to finish here, that Hyunmin's 5 garnets are going to go down the tubes. So he doubts his own partner, and it does turn out that Kyunghoon had rolled a bust. And so, actually, as the way this ends up turning out, is Ah Young ends up being the first one to finish.
Yeah, so characteristically for Ah Young, the one time where she actually gets to win a main match is because everyone else is just spewing off horrifically.
Well, I mean,
what's going on.
Yeah, she's not the winner, but she's at least the first one to get around, and thus one had bet on her. But it was a totally unanticipated kind of thing where people just kept rolling bad things or doubting at the right time, and it was Ah Young went on a heater to end up winning garnets for no one and just lighting a bunch of garnets on fire. This main match, we started, I think, with 84 garnets or something, and we're going to end with 60.
Yeah, it's a weird comparison, but it reminds me of like the coconut chop challenges in Survivor, where like everyone is just taking the axe to each other's like markers or whatever, and it's always the one person that no one even remembers is there that ends up just vaulting through to the end because no one remembers to hit their things anymore.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a very apt comparison, and so we will go on to round 2, and this is where Yuyun just really starts heating up, and this almost makes this like. I'd be interested in the alternate reality where we get to see this main match play out in such a way that it doesn't end in Yuyun going on a 7,800-1 kind of dice heater, where we could have seen a lot more interesting dynamics go down, but this game really ends up just playing itself out the way that he ended up rolling.
Before we get into that quickly, let's note Hui Zhong's attempt to unionize the guests, essentially. Like, he goes to all of them and says, well, as the guests, we don't want to lose to these contestants who have made it further than us, and he tries to like evoke this group solidarity in them, not very convincingly, I might add, but also I don't think there is a convincing case to make, because they all realize, like, Kyunghoon, despite his Kyunghoon-esque traits, is certainly smart enough to realize that doesn't make sense for him. And like Yuyun obviously realizes that, and I think Ah Young is skeptical of it too. So like they see right through this case, and Hui Zhong is not the best suited to make it in the first place, because just no one's going to believe him.
Right. Even Dr. Yansung came out and said, you're essentially just asking us, the remaining players, to give you money. Like that's what you're doing.
Right. And Hui Zhong especially can't argue that, because if he thinks he's the guy without the partner, then he can't even like guilt trip his partner into maybe shuffling some garnets his way or whatever. Like there's literally nothing he can say to make this a good proposition for them.
I was wondering, because they start them with 4 garnets on the dealer table, but I was trying to figure out how the guests can get more garnets, like can get up to 10 or more garnets. I know they can only max out at 10, but it seems like it really does require someone like Yuyun rolling the nuts 6 times in a row and constantly having to get doubted. And even then, he only came away with 9,000, where he was getting doubted on every single one of those rolls, and otherwise it would have been like 3,000.
Yeah, I've been wondering, when they design the games, like, do they do trial runs of these, or like, do they try and map out these likely outcomes on paper? Because, as you say, it does feel like the kind of the numbers that they put on this just wasn't really realistic. Like, even when Yuyun does something which probability just dictates he shouldn't be able to do, you know, 999 times out of 1,000 or whatever, like, even then, even in the one case where this might actually seem realistic, it just doesn't even come close to happening still.
Yeah, and just to get back into the way that this ends, Yuyun, for people who haven't seen it in a while, goes on an absolutely preposterous streak. I mentioned earlier it was 7,800 to 1 were the odds that they gave. And this is roughly, I would say, the improbability of in open pass, thinking back to season one, Kim Poong had the same bad cards as Jinho but didn't realize the trick. I think this is about the same odds as him just fluking his way into a better score than Jinho without realizing the trick.
He used up his one time here. Like, that is expired for life now. He can't ever invoke that again.
I mean, given that he was a professional poker player for a long time, I do not think that 9 garnets is where he wanted to be using his one time. But nonetheless, Yuyun does at least come away from this season with 9,000 going into his pocket. And the real winner this week, much like the God's Judgment game where everyone got rid of all their garnets, 24 garnets came out of play this week. So our final prize, as I mentioned, is going from 84 grand down to 60. And Dongmin is our winner here with 26 of those garnets. Yeonsung at 22 and Hyunmin down to 12 after just completely unable to get anything going and then doubting everyone incorrectly.
Yeah, and without giving too much away, it is an immediate talking point at the start of season 4 just how small the prize pool was in season 3 and also in the other seasons. And they collectively resolved to milk as much money from the producers as possible.
Right. It'd be kind of like on Survivor if we saw them before the auction saying, okay, we're going to keep the bidding low, right? We're going to keep $20 is going to be winning the peanut butter sandwich this season.
Well, didn't they do that in one of the auctions and then Jeff got mad at them?
I think Rob Cesternino said that in Amazon they tried to do that and the producers shut it down. But yeah, so we are going to move on to our final death match of the season. I guess not counting one-on-one games in the finals as death matches. We have Hyunmin and Yeonsung, and they are going to be playing Betting Black and White, which is very similar to normal Black and White, where each player gets the tiles. This time, however, it's going to be an extra tile. We're going to get 0 through 9. Where the even numbers are black and the odd numbers are white. And however, this time, the players are going to arrange all 10 of those tiles face down ahead of time and then bet in chips. They each get 30 chips to space out across all their tiles, and they're basically going down the line playing one-on-one games of war. If you want, both people need to match the same bet in order for the tiles to get exposed. Otherwise, whoever bet less has to just fold and give up the chips. So this will quickly, as we see, become a race to just get 31 chips and then fold.
Yeah, and so previous iterations of Black and White, it's been you think about it as individual rounds. So we play a round, and that uses up one of our cards, and then we play another round and so on. And it's the number of rounds that you win, like whoever wins a majority of the rounds who wins the overall match. In this game, you don't care about how many individual matches you win. All you care about is how many garnets you, or how many chips rather, you have at the end. And so you can happily forfeit 6 out of the 9 contests if you won enough on the first few. And that's what Hyunmin realizes very quickly and ends up basing his entire strategy around.
Right, and we see, credit to Dongmin, who they are never allowed to talk to. The guests and Dongmin are not at all allowed to talk to Hyunmin and Yeonsung as they're crafting their plan for this. And Dongmin, in the side room, comes up with the exact same plan. He says, go heavy on your big four and then just give up the rest. And then as soon as they see the players, he says, oh, that's exactly what Hyunmin did.
And Huizhong, the professional math teacher, is baffled by this and doesn't understand why it actually works. The central insight here from Hyunmin is if you, and I think the timing is important too, so if you bet enough on the early rounds and you front load your higher cards, then instantly you put your opponent to the test of needing to win those specific matchups early. And if they fall behind, then on each individual later match, it becomes that much harder for them because they can get mathematically locked out if certain things go wrong. And so you can you can realize the incentives that they're facing and then build your own strategy around that. It's very similar to these other betting games that we've seen on The Genius, where just taking any kind of early lead puts you in such a crushing position that it makes sense to make these high-risk plays to get that lead early on.
Right, and so the reason I said it's a race to 31 chips is they each get 30 chips to start, and then you just, when you win a showdown, you pull those, all of the chips that came with that showdown back. So once you get to 31, you can just fold everything and know that you are on to the finals 100% of the time. And so that is exactly what Hyunmin does. He puts his, he goes 9, 6, 7, 8 are his first four numbers, and he puts 12 chips on the 9 and then 4 each on the other 3. And assuming he wins all of those, or that is way more than enough to just move on to the finals and fold the rest.
Yeah, so to clarify that, I think what is often going to happen in this game is you have this clash early, and then all of the lower value cards are just going to have the minimum bet behind them, so one chip. And you want to get in this position where even if you have to fold, or even if you lose every one of those contests, then your opponent can't catch your lead. And so, like, if you, that there are 60 chips in play of rule, if you end up with 31 chips behind, there is nothing your opponent can do. Even if they win every chip that's still currently left in play, they can only get to 29, which is lower than your 31. And so if your lead going into the mid game is like 5 or 6 or something, you can ensure that even if you lose, like even if your opponent's cards are lined up perfectly so that their 5 beats your 4 and then their 2 beats your 1 and so on all the way down the line, they still can't catch your lead.
Right.
And it's not actually that hard to get there. So given that the minimum bet is 1, you only need to take a lead of, like, I think it's, someone did the math on this, but it's like, if you have a lead of like 5 or 6 early on, you can very quickly just lock out your opponent. And so knowing that, I think a game that was played between two players of Hyunmin's caliber would actually be pretty interesting, right? Because, like, how do you work around that dynamic?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly feel like we haven't really seen a ton of death matches that are totally even. Like, these types of death matches, like, I feel like this is another equivalent of, like, Yoan versus Lawyer Yunsun in Laser Chess. Like, this was never going to be close.
Yeah. One thing that's really worth noting here is if there's no raising in this game, so you, like, you can move chips around to match your opponent's bet if it's higher than your bet, but you can't re-raise them. Like, you can't add more chips to try and push more weight onto a certain contest when you have more information. And specifically, if the bet is tied, the cards are just instantly revealed, and that's the matchup. So if you have the last 5 rounds are all like one chip versus one chip, there's nothing you can do at that point. The game is already deterministic. So it kind of shrinks the game into those first few rounds. And if you're able to take that lead early, it means that every one of your opponent's decisions matters that much more. Like, every decision is potentially game losing for them.
Right.
And they need to have put those cards in their favor up front. And so, like, we see, like, Dr. Yunsung, we hear some of his preparation, and he's saying stuff like, okay, well, I'm going to mix things up a bit. So I'll put some of my big cards in the front and others near the end. And then for some of my small cards, I'll bet a bit higher on those, so he can't judge which is going where. And that's, all of that is pretty sound general strategy, right? But that's like very small tactical stuff and very obvious. And Hyunmin just instantly sees the bigger picture of, okay, this is what this game is about on a fundamental level, and this is how I need to approach it.
Right. This game is about taking control of, you know, getting possession of 31 chips and then folding the rest of the way. And that is what he does. As I mentioned, he puts 12 on his 9, and I think that's a pretty decent idea, where if Dr. Yunsung put, you know, starts off with a pretty decent number, he would probably not lead off with just putting one chip on his first number. And he's also probably not going to match a bet of 12. So if Hyunmin runs into a scenario where, say, Yunsung leads off with like his 6 or a 5 and puts like 4 chips on it just to merge his range or whatever, he's never going to call. And suddenly Hyunmin has possession of 16 chips after the first turn and is halfway done.
So given that, would you actually bet 12 on your 9, or would you have like a 7 in there instead? Because a 7, unless he has an 8 or a 9 himself, and if he has a 9, he's still calling anyway. So, like, I can imagine a scenario where, like, Hyunmin has his 7 there, Yunsung has his own 7, but then he ends up folding his 7 because the bet is so large that surely it must be the 9, right?
Right. I think that's definitely one idea, but I also don't think you can open the door in Hyunmin's spot for the other person also coming up with the plan of leading their 9, and suddenly you've put 12 chips on your 7 and you can't win.
Right. And also, it's like, so if your opponent folds, they don't get to see your card. And so it's always going to be in the back of their head, like, did I just get bluffed? Like, did I fold to 12 chips on a 1? Like, that's, they, they can't have that sense of security. And so, like, yeah, Hyunmin knows that his nine is out of play, but as far as Yunsung is concerned, any one of those remaining cards could be the nine, and if it is, he's just done.
Right, right. And I think another kind of critical thing, it seems like to me, Yunsung was, like, he would put a couple chips on his one and a couple chips on his two, and it seemed like he wasn't even getting through a lot of his bigger numbers. It seemed like he just thought, oh, I kind of want in almost random order for these numbers, so he can't anticipate where any of them are going to be. But the big problem with that is the game was over by the time it was the fourth turn, and you're never going to get to see your eight or your nine.
So if you think that you're facing someone who's using human strategy, is there any merit to betting more than the minimum at any point? Surely you just start with one chip on every card, and then based on how their chips are distributed, you can call or fold as the game dictates.
You must place all 30 chips. You can't just keep them back.
Okay,
you have to put them all down. Yeah. Otherwise, of course, you would just do that. Yeah. I guess you run the risk of all of them then be him doing the same thing, and it purely comes down to a showdown. Yeah.
That'd be kind of funny, though, just coin flip to determine who makes the finals.
I mean, we saw Jinho and Jiwon flip a coin to determine who moved on in the Indian Hold'em.
Right. I think it's in the second round here where Yunsung calls with his two, and his reasoning is he wants to see which tiles Hyunmin is using so that in the later rounds he has more information. And, okay, having information is a good thing, but, like, the game is going to be over at that point.
Yeah,
and
there will be no later rounds.
And it's going to be over in part because he called this bet with his two and seeded that many chips, and that pushes Hyunmin ever closer to having that magical lockout threshold.
Right, and I mean, he ends up putting in four chips with his one, because I think if he folded, it was just done, and he had to just hope that Hyunmin had a zero or something.
And we can criticize him for calling with the two, but then if he folds, he's also in a rough position. And that's the advantage of doing what Hyunmin did, just establishing this lead early. And then every decision is both hard and critical from then on.
Right. I think, honestly, as soon as he folded to the nine and then called, I think, against the six or the seven, it was just over. I don't think there was anything he could have done, any way he could have played it. He just got outmaneuvered.
And I think you saw it in his face and then in his post-mortem later, he realized as soon as he saw the way the chips were distributed, like, I've been outmatched here. Like, Hyunmin has just outthought me completely. And we see him in this very kind of wistful and touching, actually, kind of goodbye montage at the end, him saying, like, oh, well, of course, ordinary is going to lose to extraordinary or something like that. And I think Yunsung, like, was the underdog in this context, right? Like, he isn't Dongmin, who's, like, this incredibly charismatic leader. He wasn't this child prodigy the way Hyunmin is. He's just, like, this normal guy who's a very, very smart guy, right? Like, he's smart enough to get on the genius and be competitive. But, like, the other two are just that tier above him.
Yeah.
And it's a credit to him that he's able to, like, compete with them and make it as far as he did.
I totally agree. Yeah, he was my boy. It wasn't even so much my first time through watching it, but definitely as I rewatched this season sometime last year at this point, Dr. Yunsung was definitely my boy, my kind of sleeper pick. Not that I was unsure of how it was going to go for him, but I really, I guess, grew to love Dr. Yunsung a lot more on a rewatch. And I think that's another reason, not only for Dr. Yunsung, but I think anyone would pick up on a lot of character notes for a lot of different people across all of the seasons on a rewatch. And that's just one of the many, many reasons I recommend doing that. But yeah, I absolutely love Dr. Yunsung. Very excited that he's going to be back for the Genius Four. And to go back to that quote you said, where he said, yeah, it's quite difficult for ordinary to beat extraordinary. I don't think I would call Dr. Yunsung just an ordinary guy. I think he definitely totally held his own over the course of this season. Was really fun. I know he's like a quieter guy on TV, especially amid a season with like Dongmin and other bigger personalities, but I thought it was really great to see him go this far. I was, of course, happy that it was going to be Dongmin and Hyunmin showing down in the finals, but I was really, really happy with just everything we got out of Dr. Yunsung this season.
This felt like the right spot for him to go out, right? Like,
yeah.
If he had made the finals, you may have been rooting for him, and you know, I'm sure he had his fans out there. But it, like, in terms of the larger narrative of the season, it would have felt kind of off key.
Right, and I mean, to go back to it, and I think I've brought this up whenever the last time we were talking about my random love for Dr. Yunsung, they call him the Mentality King, where he really does not seem to get rattled. Even when he, you know, the screen comes up and he sees Hyunmin's cards, he doesn't start losing focus and start calling it quits immediately, even though he can be pretty sure he's not going to come out of that alive. Even up when he's got his back up against the wall, when he's playing Union in the first middle race, he's not freaking out on anyone. He's not calling it, you know, he's not resigning himself to the death match right away. He's staying focused once he's in all of, he went to three different death matches. I definitely think a lot of really admirable stuff from Yan Sung that I possess absolutely none of, and I think that's why I'm so drawn to him.
Yeah, like in the season 4 opening montage, which is also fantastic and which rivals the final opening sequence here in some aspects, like we see the three winners, so Jinho, Sangmin, and Dongmin, and then all the others, we have this very quick, like, I don't know what the word is, but like it very quickly switches between all of them, and we see like this 1 second clip of each of them with some quote that illustrates them in some kind of argument or not knowing what's going on. And like, I felt like Yeon Song's in particular was quite unfair. It's like him getting into an argument, and that's the one time he ever got into an argument with anybody, and that's supposed to be representative of why he lost.
Right. I mean, no, most weeks he's bringing people health drinks to the set. He's being very friendly. He's giving, I don't know, he's doing acupuncture for people between sessions. Yeah. Really good stuff. So that is going to be the end of Dr. Yeon Song. And I think let's get into the finals.
Yeah, and I think we'll take a somewhat unconventional approach to doing this, and we're going to start at the beginning. So brace yourselves, okay? I know it's hard to follow along, but yeah, I think we'll all manage get through this together. So we start with this opening montage, which we've both spoken very highly of before, but let's get into the details here and exactly what we find so fascinating about it.
Yeah, this is just fantastic stuff. I believe I may have called this the best 10 minutes of the season, and maybe that was a bit hyperbolic. There was definitely some good stuff in here, but I don't know. I think this may have been the high point of all of it, where we get a very interesting opening to the premiere where we're ready for, okay, it's the finals, it's Dongmin against Hyunmin. This is going to be a big, intense showdown of three one-on-one games, and instead we start with both of them individually entering this kind of like black room almost with just a projector screen that they can see, and they're told to just watch the video, and we get production has put together a video that they play for both of them highlighting their evolution both as players and then as a pair as the games evolved and getting their commentary on it at the same time. And I think this is something that, like, obviously just the way it's formatted, it seems like Survivor or Big Brother just could never ever do. And I think this is one of the things that makes The Genius just so uniquely great among reality TV is their willingness and ability to do this kind of thing.
Yeah, so first of all, I want to note that this is high-risk television. Like, there's a very good chance if you get this wrong, it comes across as so hokey and so just like, like if you get the tone wrong, it really undermines the whole thing that you're going for with the finale, I think. So you really have to get this right, and I think they absolutely nailed it. But I agree that you see this on The Genius in a way that you wouldn't on other shows, because on Survivor, you at the start of every finale, you have Jeff just editorializing for a few minutes, just like giving the party line on what we're meant to, you know, who we're meant to root for and what the story's been, even though it bears basically no resemblance to reality as far as we can tell a lot of the time. And that's Jeff kind of telling you what's going on. You maybe get some confessionals and so on, but you don't hear from the people themselves. This is entirely in their own words, and this is just footage that they didn't have to, like, you know, this isn't contrived. They didn't have to, like, set this up in any way. This is literally just them talking to the camera, like, saying what they thought at every given moment. And it's so nice to see that contrast between, like, what Dongmin thought about Hyunmin and vice versa before the game even started, when they'd only just read each other's casting bios. And then towards the end, when, you know, they've had this amazing journey through the season together, and then at each point through that, you know, we see that relationship between the two of them start to form, and then that actual, like, formal final two deal gets struck and so on. And it's just really nice to actually get that in their own words and through their own eyes, I suppose.
Yeah, I think probably the highlight of it, as you kind of alluded to, is the pre-season interviews where they found out they were going to be on the cast and they just got a list of who else was going to be there. And Dongmin obviously does not know who Hyunmin is, but just knows he's a student at KAIST and gives the monologue about, like, oh, what could he possibly know having just read books? And then they cut to Hyunmin, who's wearing, like, a George Michael Bluth from Arrested Development kind of t-shirt. He looks like this goofy little nerd. And they say, oh, what do you think about Dongmin, who he does know of course, because he's a famous comedian. And he says, oh, I think he's just going to be the worst. I think he's going to be the first one out.
He also says, quote, "I really hate shouting, but people really like him for some reason, which if I had to give a testimonial about you, that's pretty much what I would say, I think."
Fair. I don't think I could really argue with that. But yeah, this is really good stuff where we get just clips from even, you know, the fruit stand game before they were even really an alliance together. But there are some good shots of them in there. And they seem to actually hit it off well that first episode during the as the Watermelon Alliance in there. And then, of course, we get a lot of extra stuff that they didn't air during the episodes of the Minor Game and then Stormy Stock Market, where they really solidified that final two. But like, this is where we for the first time see a scene that I referenced when we talked about the Minor Game all the way back, where we finally see a post-match interview from the Minor Game of Dongmin saying, "Next week I'm going to make Hyunmin a big deal." And this is also the first a big offer for a big deal, being that final two deal that they locked in. And this is also Hyunmin's first time seeing it in there. And so it is really cool to get not only hear from them about just the course of the season, but for them to see what the other one has been saying about them all along.
Yeah, and I like the way they set this up, where they don't actually meet at first. You have them just sitting separately watching the other person's clips from before, just like in complete darkness. So the only thing you see is the contestant sitting on the chair illuminated and the clip, and that really helps to like center everything and add this kind of atmosphere to it. And the music's great as well. Like, yeah, they chose that perfectly. And so by the time that the kind of light comes up, I suppose, we actually see the two of them standing there together, still with everything else blacked out, like you're like really in the moment and getting excited for it. And I like that when the two of them were there together, and like they didn't quite know what they were meant to say, because Dongmin obviously is like this braggart who is gonna like be talking a lot of smack and so on, and Hyunmin is just really not that kind of guy, right? And so, but he feels the need to kind of give as good as he's getting from Dongmin. So you get a kind of like forced awkward smack talking from Hyunmin, which is pretty cool. And I like the contrast as well between, like, you know, Dongmin says, "I was like you a lot when I was your age," and Yun Sung actually said the same thing himself on the way out. And I think that's what a lot of people found kind of threatening in a way about Hyunmin, that like they kind of implicitly, without helping themselves, have to compare how they were at age 19 or 20 to how Hyunmin is, and Hyunmin is like so confident and smart and self-assured, and I seem to have everything figured out in a way which even a lot of these guys didn't seem to.
Yeah, I mean, I think Dr. Yansung said, "I wish I had been like him when I was 19 or 20. Yeah. Like, he was what I wish I had been when I was 19 or 20.
I wish I was like that when I was 19 or 20, yeah. But we see, like, Dongmin talk about how he was when he was that age. And it's so, like, we talk about Hyunmin and, like, 28-year-old Hyunmin potentially just being, like, this all-time great reality TV player based on season 3. But it's so weird to think about Dongmin being younger almost, because, like, we think of him as, like, this authority figure, this adult who's, you know, one of the oldest people in the room. But we don't, like, I can kind of see, picture in my head what he must have been like at that age, and it's not that different, I don't think.
Yeah, and incidentally, we say 19 or 20, and we talked about this earlier in a previous podcast about the discrepancy between Hyunmin says he's 20 years old, but he also says he was born in 1995, and this was happening in 2014, so he can't be 20 years old. We got a couple of comments on the blog post from that, so just to clear this up quickly, both Brian Duddy and Kayla Dempster clarified that in Korea, birthdays are just done differently. When someone is born, they are already considered 1 year old, and then on January of every year, everyone who was born in that year collectively turns 1 year older, and that is why being the same age as people is such a big deal. And this is actually the genesis of Dongmin and the dealer, and the Xinghua thing is he finds out that they are the same age, and that's what like the like colloquially.
Wait, so yeah, same age in which of those definitions?
Either one. They were born in the same year, which would make them the same age, because they're both getting one added immediately, and then they're both getting one added every January. And I remember Yanju and Yuyun, I believe, were both 28, and that was a big deal to them that they were both. I would imagine it sounds to me like it's no different than who's in your high school class. Like those are the kids that you're always with.
This is even more ridiculous than that month first date system that you guys use. It's just absolute nonsense.
Well, never mind. I was going to bring up a Malcolm Gladwell thing just to get you going, but I didn't. Well, now's the time. Well, no, I mean, you are, of course, familiar with the Malcolm Gladwell thing about in Outliers, I think is what it's from. It seems like it would be from that one, where the people born early in the calendar year have a big edge because they are the older people in any given class.
Well, like everything that Malcolm Gladwell writes, it sounds intuitively plausible, but you have no idea if it's actually true or not. And you kind of want to believe it because it's this fun, you know, story that you can tell up, you know,
to make
yourself sound smart.
He sounds so smart and reassuring when he says it, though. So I really want to believe it. It's like John Oliver. Like, there's no way.
Or like Dolman, right?
Yeah. Okay, so I guess let's get into, fantastic, I suppose, opening montage. Do you have anything more on that other than, please, if you haven't, to this point, listened to me yet and rewatched anything from The Genius thus far, do yourself a favor and at least rewatch that. The beginning of season 3, episode 12 is, I will say, I'll stand by the best 10 minutes of the season.
Yeah, there are certain clips from various Genius episodes that I always like going back and watching from time to time, and that entire montage is one of them for me. Yeah. You know, it's really great, and one of the only ones from this season, I would say, because you know, season 3 was kind of lacking in those big dramatic reveals of the sort that we had with like the ID token of immortality reveal in season 2 and open pass in season 1. Like, there wasn't really anything on that level this season, as far as I can tell. I mean, you might disagree, but I think just in terms of like the human drama of it all, I think this season probably ranks at the top of the ones we've covered so far.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get to this shortly, but Genius 3 to this point was my favorite season so far, and my favorite season in the history of reality TV prior to the Genius 4 coming along. But you are, I mean, when I think about the episodes from this season that I've rewatched a lot, it would be The Minor Game, The Jury Game, and Chain Auction, and two of those three were because of just how crushing I thought the performance was by Hyunmin, and also that death match, the monorail death match, is super incredible. And then the minor game, just because we took so long to start doing the next part of The Genius that I had to keep rewatching it. But it is a really great episode. I was always happy to keep rewatching it.
Yeah, I think Monorail is one of those moments, but Chain Auction is the perfect example of what I'm saying, I think, because like that performance by Hyunmin is, as I covered in Part 3, is fantastic, just amazing to watch, and incredible that he was even able to do that. But it's not one singular moment. It's not like half an hour into the episode, Extreme Ways drops, and there's this big reveal, and we're all overwhelmed suddenly by how amazing Hyunmin is. It's just, he just says to the camera, like 5 minutes in, okay, this is what I'm going to do, and this is why it makes sense. And it does, and he wins. Well, doesn't win, but the point is still there.
Right. I mean, I think I would probably say that Monorail is the emotional high, or, you know, the emotional biggest swell of the season, where they hit you with the fake montage that Dongmin is going to leave when the game it should be completely lost and he should be gone. And the whole, you know, the gallery is all there saying, oh my God, it's over. And then Yeonju finds the right move. And that is why, I know I brought this up last time, but why I'm so anti putting spoilers out there on Twitter, because if you know Dongmin has to make it through there, then you are completely robbed of that moment. But it's also probably why, even on a rewatch, it's not the same as rewatching like the chaos of a Monopoly game, or the just sheer amazingness of something like Jinho and Open Pass coming out of nowhere. It's so much fun on rewatch. I would say, though, just because you know Dongmin isn't actually going anywhere, Monorail, it's fun to see, oh my God, look how much fun they were having with us. But you know he's going to be safe. Whereas the first time through, I was ready to be completely devastated. Like, the season was ready to take a hard turn downward for me.
Yeah. So when the lights go up, we reach, you know, after the introduction, we finally see the eliminated players return as kind of a jury in a sense. And as they're coming in, we get the usual updates from Bumdiddly Umptious telling us about all the kind of nicknames that they've been given since they left. And the ones this season are just a top shelf, I have to say. Like, it's like Kyunghoon in particular. I'm sure we'll get there in a second, but just all of them, like, Jongbum seems to have become an online meme for some reason, still not quite sure why. But yeah, all of them, like, the internet Genius fan community seems to be even stranger in a good way than the Survivor fan community.
Yeah, Yu-Yun has apparently become Kim Yut-Yun because of his incredible rolling ability in Doubting Yut-Nori that we just talked about, which I'm actually surprised that we didn't inadvertently start calling him Yut-Yun just because of the bad puns that we reach for on this show. But yeah, Dime, you referenced by far the best one. Kyunghoon has apparently become now known as Titty God because he made what he thought was going to be like an anonymous post spoiling online that he was going to be on The Genius, and there was some kind of, someone posted a response that he didn't like, and he told them to go suck on their mom's titties.
I love, first of all, that he would post that. And secondly, he couldn't even do it anonymously correctly. Like, that is just classic Kyung-hoon behavior. I wonder if, like, above anything else, like even the episode 11 performance, that's the thing that convinces them to bring him back for season 4. Like, if someone is capable of doing that, then surely, you know, there's a deep well of just weird behavior lying in there that you can tap into.
Yeah. I definitely did this myself, but I paused and took a screenshot of that photo to post, yep, like in the Genius thread. I swear to you, I've had like 5 or 6 people send me that screen grab. Like, oh my God, look at this. This is so funny. Like, because it's so magical the first time you see it. It's the funniest thing in the world that that's like actually something that caught on for him in Korea. Yeah.
Right. I like that the Bumdi is actually like conveying that to us as well, because I almost wish that had been embedded into the actual show, like the producers had kind of given us all of this extra information. But I guess the Korean viewers who don't follow the weird rabbit hole of the Genius internet are actually missing out on that.
Yeah, and this is something I can't believe we don't say 4 times. We should say 4 times every podcast, and we don't say enough, and I'm nervous that if I don't bring it up now, I'm going to forget to bring it up at the end. Such a huge debt is owed to Bum Diddlyumptious for doing all of the subtitling all on everything here, and continuing with games like Crime Scene or like Society Game. It to me seems like they're the Willy Wonka of subtitling, where when people even tweet at them saying, please let us give you money, they get no response. It seems like this is purely a passion project. I have no idea what's in it for them. Maybe they get like ad revenue from YouTube or whatever. But we definitely do not say nearly enough how much is owed to Bum Diddlyumptious for all of this. I'm sure anyone who has made it this far into this podcast knows exactly what we're talking about, but it definitely can't keep going unsaid.
And I like that he remains this enigmatic figure. He is almost like Bandage Man. Like, you never see his face. You never know anything about them. They just deliver perfect content to you whenever you want.
That's a great parallel. I think they definitely are the Bandage Man of the reality universe. I think that's perfect. So definitely a big shout out and huge lifetime debt of gratitude to Bum Diddlyumptious for sure.
Yeah. So let's go into who each of the eliminated contestants gave their items to. So as a refresher, the way it works on the Genius is, obviously on the Genius we don't have a jury vote, but they still want the eliminated contestants to play some part in the final outcome and be able to give their say in who they want to win. And the way they do that is each person is given a randomized item that they can give to one of the two finalists, and those items can be used in the 3 games in the finals to confer some kind of advantage. So before that happens, there's this brief questioning period where Dongmin and Hyunmin are individually sequestered in this room backstage, and they get to talk to the other contestants. And what I thought was really interesting about this was Dongmin presents himself as just like this, as the underdog, right? He's this ordinary guy who had humble beginnings, and he was able to overcome all of these highly educated geniuses from KAIST and elsewhere. And Soojin actually echoes that in her own explanation for why she, along with seemingly everybody else at this stage, gives Dongmin her item, saying like, oh, we're just the ordinary people, and we have to sit together against all of these upper class elites, essentially. I thought that was kind of strange, because like Dongmin, like purely in terms of his economic background, as far as I know, you know, that is true. But if you think about the position he's in his life, so firstly,
right.
anyone who is on the Genius to begin with is already much smarter and much savvier than almost anyone in the general population, right? And they must have some kind of attractive qualities for TV that would lead producers to be drawn to them over the hundreds of other people they could have gone with. So already those are traits which are going to serve you well both in the industry and in real life. And Dongmin is a professional entertainer. Like, he has made a living doing this. He's clearly someone who has extraordinary charisma, leadership ability, and so on. So even if he didn't have the Genius as a pastime, essentially, he would still be incredibly successful, and we know that he is in his real life. But then also, if you look at the context purely of the game, like, he was never the underdog except for when he forced himself into that role by some of his occasional mistakes, right? He was almost always the leader of the group, the person who was winning the main matches in his position of power. So it's really weird to see him frame himself as the underdog and for people to actually believe it.
Right. I mean, to me, Soojin saying, oh, I need to go for Dongmin because we're just the ordinary people. Like, okay, one of these two finalists is rich and famous, and the other one is a college student. And she's saying that the famous guy is the one.
A college student who is one of the actual ordinary people who got taken in through the casting process, right? He wasn't some celebrity who was headhunted to appear on the show. So if anything, you'd expect Soo-jin to have more sympathy for Hyunmin. And you think about that, and also the fact that in the very first episode, Soo-jin didn't seem to like Dongmin at all, and very quickly he just was attached to him at the hip. Like, he has this weird way of just getting people on his side who you would never expect to be there.
Well, let's go through these, because Dongmin, we have 11 of these little advantage snow globes in play. Dongmin's going to wind up with 8 out of these 11, including the first 6, and they go through in elimination order, is the order that they decide who they want to be giving their thing to. And so the 3 that ended up choosing Hyunmin were Jongbum, Ayoung, and Yeonsung, all of whom were in the back half of the group, of course, because the first 6 all went to Dongmin. But what did you make of that? Because there is what I've always figured to be the main consideration is plenty of Dongmin's allies went out early, like Juri, the first boot, went out on Dongmin's team. Huijong and Soo-jin also worked closely with Dongmin. Jung-hoon, who wasn't present for this and thus couldn't see that it was already 5-0 and might have otherwise gone for Hyunmin, did also work closely with Dongmin, so he went for Dongmin. But what was your rationale, I guess, for how it ended up being so lopsided?
And Jung-hoon, another one, by the way, who came into the season saying he was going to explicitly target Dongmin and that he had some unfinished business with him, which is never referenced again. And then by episode 6, when he goes out, he's talking about how much he loves Dongmin and how much he could stick around still so that he could continue to work with Dongmin. Like, I'm envious of, like, if I had even a tenth of what Dongmin has, like, that, you know, that is just formidable talent right there.
I mean, maybe they put Jung-hoon and Soo-jin in, who both seem to, based on the premiere, have like lingering beef with Dongmin, thinking that it would inevitably explode because, of course, this guy is going to be such a big personality. He's going to get in his own way and be his own worst enemy, and this is all going to come to the forefront of everyone's attention earlier rather than later. And instead, what they got was like an incredibly impressive version of Dongmin that I doubt, this is something I've never even thought of, but do you think production was aware of how good Dongmin was going to be?
I don't think so, honestly. Like, if I was production, I would expect Dongmin to be like this good entertainer and to be this like loud, boisterous figure for as long as he's there, however long that might be. And it turns out it's going to be as long as the season lasts, because like, he is, yeah, I mean, this is, I think, a lot better than they or anyone else could have really expected.
Yeah, I mean, Hyunmin thought he would be the first one out.
Not better than Dongmin expected, I'm sure. I'm sure he was expecting to win it from day one. But yeah, like, when he gets the first 6 items, I was thinking, like, this could just be like 10-1 or like just a complete clean sweep. And maybe, given like the cultural things, you know, even if everyone wanted to give the items to Dongmin, someone would give it to Hyunmin just to, you know, it redress the balance a little bit. But yeah, he gets the first 6, and then the 3 who go for Hyunmin are Jongbum, Ayoung, and Dr. Yeonsung, all of whom, I think, if you had asked me who are the most likely people to give it to him, they would be on the list. I was kind of surprised that Yuyun actually gave it to Dongmin, though, because it seemed like, yeah, the two of them were always butting heads, and Hyunmin, again, was someone who came through the same casting process as Yuyun. But Yuyun says, like, he admired the way that Dongmin was able to, like, lead the team and lead from the front and really, you know, imposes well on the games, which, you know, fair enough, I suppose. And then I guess the only other one that surprised me really was Yeonju.
I mean, maybe then, she felt like again, he beat her or something.
Yeah, and then again, on her way out, she seemed to still be you know, a big ally of his. So yeah, I mean, it's, so I was expecting going into the finale that Hyunmin would pretty easily take it just in terms of game skill. But depending on how powerful these items are, when Dongmin is up 8-3, that's got to shift things a little bit in his favor.
Oh, I definitely think so. And I think we should probably get into now that I was pretty disappointed with how much it ended up shifting things in his favor. Like, the first game, 12 Jangi, it ended up not making a huge difference other than that was where 2 of Hyunmin's 3 items ended up falling, and Hyunmin did not need either of those items when they could have otherwise been much more beneficial if they had they just been different items.
Right, and when you only have 3 items, each one of those, in theory, needs to be more important. So, like, if you take 2 items off the board for Hyunmin and suppose you took two items off the board for Dongmin, that would be even better for Dongmin, right? Because there's no, like, that would lessen the chance that there was one amazing item that Hyunmin somehow had that was gonna let him overcome that disparity.
Right. I mean, after this game, the items went from 8-3 down to 6-1. And granted, Hyunmin won the first game, but he didn't need the. It could have just as easily used no items and been at like 6-3 or something, or even better, like 5-3 or something of that, something close to that.
Right. So as you said, the first game is 12 Jengi, and it's hard to see what items they could introduce that would really help in this game without being overpowered, because you can't have an item that's like
extra man,
move a piece around. Yeah, like extra move, extra piece. Like, that's just not going to work. So it has to be something like, you get extra time to consider a move, or you get like a grace period where you can like quickly take it back and then do something else. It can't be anything which actually affects the game in that way.
Right, and those end up being what it is, where we get the bonus 90 seconds item, which they each get 90 seconds per turn, and then also the mulligan item, which if you make a move and your opponent hasn't played their response move yet, you can take back your move if you see like, oh shit, I shouldn't have done that. You can go ahead and do that, except we end up seeing Dongmin have that, and the way that their strategies played out, Dongmin would really let the clock wind down during his turn, and then Hyunmin would play very, very quickly to keep the pressure on Dongmin, because he was always getting plenty of time to think during Dongmin's turns too.
Yeah, and based on Hyunmin's previous match of 12 Jengi against Dongbum, and just based on their respective skill sets, I was expecting Hyunmin to win comfortably in this game, and that's pretty much what we saw.
Well, the one reason that I was at least led to believe it could go the other way, and they did have quite a drawn out battle, but we got a clip of a flashback to when Hyunmin was playing this as his death match against Jongbum, and Dongmin said, like, if there's anything in the world that I know about, it's Jengi. Like, I am a god at Jengi. And then he proceeded to beat Hyunmin in their first practice game and then lose all of the rest after Hyunmin had played one game.
Dongmin is going to say that about anything. Like, Dongmin is basically coach. He's coach. If coach was actually good at half of the stuff that he came to be good at.
I can't believe that's the first time that comparison's being made. Yeah, that's good stuff. But yeah, so 12 Jengi, we've been over it before, and it's not, again, not a very podcast-friendly game, but it's basically a Korean mini chess variant on a 4x3 board. Suffice to say, it's a game of pretty intricate, but basic but intricate strategy. Hyunmin, quite a natural at it, and goes up 1-0 in a fairly quick game. It's not a game that's going to take a super long time, typically, when they're playing with a clock, which they were. So Hyunmin is now up 1-0 and is one game away from winning the genius. However, definitely still has to be worried about being down 6 items to his 1 item remaining. We are now going to play for game number 2, a new game that we have never seen before. And in this case, Dom, that is going to be the same number hunt. Now, we have seen same picture hunt famously, where it's that 4x4 grid where they have the images and their own little placards on a conveyor belt. And it's kind of like Wheel of Fortune style, where the things get turned around after they guess a letter, and they have to run up their player up their board, or it tips around the other way and they'll eventually fall off. In this case, we are playing same number hunt, where it's that same grid, except there are going to be numbers and signs on the back of them, and then dealer Nuna is going to draw a target number, and you're going to have to give us the coordinates to find the numbers that are going to add up to make an equation that, like a number sign number equation that is going to hit that target number, and we are playing first one to 10 points wins. Now, there is also a minor thing where there's an item called the double chance, where if you can do it and make a number sign number sign number equation to add up to the target number, then you will get double points for that, and that could be critical if this becomes something where both players seem to have the board down.
And importantly, if your opponent guesses wrong the first time, then you have unlimited time to give your own response. So if you have the double chance item and your opponent messes up, then that's the ideal chance to use it. You get as much time as you want to construct this elaborate path through the board.
Right. So typically the way it works is we'll get the target number. One of them will buzz in really quickly. And then if they can't get the right, so if they can't come up with anything, or if they're wrong, within 5 seconds, it goes to the other person. So if they don't submit anything, the other person then has 5 seconds. And if they don't get it, it goes back to person A. But if the first person submits something wrong, then there is no clock pressure on person two, and they have all the time they want to get an equation that'll hit the target number. And that is what we end up seeing happen later on, where Dongman gets that opportunity, and he is the one who also gets the double chance item. And that is where he takes a good strategic opportunity to really take his time and use that double chance item and make sure he definitely nails it for double points.
And the other two items are priority. So you can use that at the start of the round to guarantee that you have the first chance to answer. You don't have to worry about being first on the buzzer. And then the peak item, which you can play to take a look at one of the tiles.
Right. We end up seeing Dongman uses the priority item when he's up to 9 points. He uses that to get to the game-winning 10th point.
Is it just me, or did the peak item never get used?
It did not ever get used, and I thought he would have used it when he did the priority thing, but he got what ended up happening is Dongman had what essentially match point and used the priority item, so there was just a big sweat about, is the number that comes out going to be something that we, you know, is easy to make using the numbers that we've been using this whole time? And he was sitting there calling, saying, give me a good number, Xinghua!
Yeah, so to draw this game out, what they do is you get 5 seconds to look at the board before it gets turned around again, which is nowhere near enough time. And this is, you know, we saw this kind of before with Jongbum and his Black Mission, where he got like 30 seconds to memorize the entire row of 12 symbols. But then here, I think it was a conscious choice to make sure that, like, you don't want someone just memorizing the board and then answering every thing correctly. Like, you want there to be mistakes, you want them to be downing themselves, you want there to be tiles which, like, maybe no one knows what's behind that tile, so you want it to have some kind of suspense to it, and it certainly worked.
Yeah, what did you think of Hyunmin's strategy? I'm always curious, you always have these good memory hacks. Hyunmin's plan was, he almost correctly deduced that the signs weren't all going to be together on the same row. He thought there would be one sign on each row. He was close, there were two that were bunched together, but his plan was to make an equation out of each of the rows. Did you think that was going to be an effective technique for 5 seconds? Because I thought that was going to be maybe even harder than just trying to take a mental snapshot of as much as possible.
Right. I think in 5 seconds, you just don't have time to do anything clever, whether it's come up with mnemonics to represent the different numbers or letters, or to do what he did and try and work this equation out or something. I guess it's fine if, let's say the board flips over and it's like, -6 + 2, and you can go, okay, -4, that's 1 second and you've done the entire row. But beyond that, like, if you find yourself thinking, okay, so that's, you know, minus this plus this to times this, it's that already, that's your time up, and you can't memorize anymore. So to me, that feels a bit too risky. I think you just take a snapshot of as much as you can and work with what you have, maybe trying to look for the symbols because you know you're going to always need one of those. I guess the question though is, does it make sense to look at a specific part of the board? Because in theory, it shouldn't matter. But if you're confident that, okay, my opponent is going to look at the top half probably, then do you want to also look at the top half, or do you want to focus on the bottom half?
So this is my Mario Party 3 strategy coming back into play that I've referenced a few times. I was a big, back in high school, big time Mario Party 3 player with my friend Jeff. So there was one game where you have to like memorize stuff, and yeah, I would always memorize the bottom. That was like how I would beat him every time, is because he would always memorize the top and then not make it through the bottom, and then I would just screen look and copy off him on the top, and then I would know the bottom. And I think that would definitely be one of the better impulses. I think it's probably critical, and we saw Dongman flag this up, I definitely want to know where addition and multiplication are, and then I would hopefully also be zoning in on 1 and 2. I think those are really, multiplication and 1 and 2, I think are really, really useful combinations.
Yeah, I would say multiplication is maybe the most important, because there are going to be some low numbers.
Easily the most important, given how many numbers are in the draw. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Right, because there are some low numbers, which, let's say it's 10, and you can get that with 4 plus 6, 3 plus 7, but also 2 times 5, 1 times 10. But then if there's a number that's high enough, if it's more than like 25 or whatever, that you're not going to get that except by multiplication. So like, we see numbers like 72 when there was 100 and something in there. And like, you need to know where multiplication is. That's the absolute most important sign. And I guess division is the one where you really don't need to know it, because there's nothing which you can only make via division.
Yeah, division is a red herring. Unlike in the chain auction, it's the opposite. Division is useless in this game, I would imagine. So we are tied 1-1. We are going to go on now to game three. We're going to be playing betting rock, paper, scissors for all the marbles for the title of the Genius Three and for all the garnets, Tom, all 60 of the garnets. And incidentally, I always wondered why this was the case, but we saw Hyunmin say the same thing when he was playing betting black and white against Dr. Yonsung in the previous episode. He said, "Oh, I hate these betting games." I feel like he would have a huge edge in these betting games. It seems like a lot of it comes down to sizing. And granted, this one, almost as we'll get to, he almost had no chance, just given the way that the rules broke down because of all of the snow globes that Dongmin got. But I would have felt like sizing would be one of the things Hyunmin would be the strongest at in the Genius.
Yeah, so in terms of like the game theoretic stuff, then obviously you would expect Hyunmin to be better. But I think he's more concerned about just the psychological aspect of having to go against Dongmin, who is an incredibly scary player in that type of situation in his own right. Like, we see him just effortlessly read people, it seems. But also, like, this is a guy that Hyunmin has been working with the whole time. He has always been on Dongmin's good side, and now for the first time, he's having to go against him in that kind of psychological contest.
Yeah, well, let's get into the way that this works, and I almost never, ever say this, but I feel like the Genius producers made an atrocious ruling here in that the way they had this play out is you can only get the rock, paper, scissors information from the people who gave you their snow globe. And even if they want to, they can't give their information to both people. I feel like this would be a much, much cleaner game if maybe not give all perfect information to everyone, like put everyone back in the room together. And if someone doesn't want to give them their information, then hey, they're out of luck. But I hate the ruling. And I don't think it's just because we saw such a disparity. I think I would have hated it anyway, because the draw would have been so insanely important if it was even close. But I really, really don't like that they ended up forcing them to give their information to only one person and they without the panelists even being aware.
Yeah, I would argue that actually isn't even the most egregious production decision in this specific game. So if you think back to the season two finale, that was often criticized because the games there were just a bit uninspiring from what we come to expect from the Genius. So the password game essentially came down to who went first, and then Quattro was just an exercise in randomness. And it felt like Sangmin won not because he was a better player than Yeo-Wan, not because he was better at the skills that the Genius is meant to test, but just because he ended up on the right side of those games. Even though, you know, we all love Sangmin. Who doesn't love Sangmin? If you don't love Sangmin, what the hell is wrong with you? And we're very happy to see him win. That did leave a bit of a sour taste in the mouth. But I think this, like, those games were bad. I think this was an actively poorly designed game when you factor in these advantages.
Yeah, I mean, I know I've said before that I feel like betting black and or not betting black and white, but what's it called? Black and white 2, the one where they're playing on the little iPads. They played early in this season, whichever number of black and white that is. I think that's black and white 2. I feel like that should have been this finals game. I think that would have been the great, see both of them, maybe even light it differently. So it's like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire style, like they're dark like they were in the beginning. I think that would be a much, much more fair and much, much better just strategically and TV friendly game.
My issue is with how overpowered these advantages are. So you look at like draw betting, I think, breaks the game in your favor, essentially, where you don't have to commit to a side. You can just force a draw, and then that really constrains your opponent's strategic decisions and gives you so many more options in a way which is just completely unfair. And then also the additional chip, which, like, if you start the game with more chips than your opponent, that is an amazing advantage to have early on in the game. And that, like, if you told me I could have those two snow globes and I would have to forfeit all of the others knowing what they are, I would take that in a second. Like, you can have your two Mulligan snow globes, you can have your priority and double Charles and Peak and so on. Just give me these and I would have an overwhelming edge, even against someone who is much better than me at betting RPS.
Well, let's get into the additional chip thing, because I feel like that would almost be overpowered, even if it was like you start with four chips and I start with three chips, but one chip versus two chips is just preposterous. It puts Hyunmin in such
that
an
changes
insane
the whole game.
Yeah.
So in the first round, Hyunmin chooses to bet, and we can talk about that decision in a second. And he knows that he can't lose, right? Because if he loses, he's down one chip to zero, assuming they both lose a chip, and then he is just out of options, because Dongmin in round two, he gets to choose what to do, and he knows that Heung-min can't bear anything, so Dong-min can just play and pick up a free chip, right? So in round one, Dong-min can safely bet one chip on win because he knows that Heung-min can't afford to lose.
Yeah, I mean, this is, even if Dong-min didn't have all of the crazy information advantage that he did have, where he had eight people's information versus Hyunmin's three, and there were a couple computer automated signs tossed in there to bail out whoever was down, but it was not nearly enough when all of Hyunmin's people were very early into the draw and all of the big chip rounds, Dong-min had 100% of the information and Hyunmin had virtually none. What are you thinking here if you're Hyunmin as far as how to overcome this?
I'm not quite sure. I think what he has to do is just get a higher absolute quantity of chips. Like if he has one chip, there's really not much he can do. If he has two or three, then even if Dong-min has him outgunned, even if it's like 5-3 or 6-3, then he at least has some room to maneuver. Maybe he can engineer like one round where he can, you know, flip the script and make an all-in bet that ends up working in his favor or something. But if he just has one chip, there's really, like, it takes multiple rounds to even get somewhere where that can be relevant. So if he enters these middle rounds of the game just not having many chips, even if he somehow manages to claw those back and get some by the end, he would need all of the final rounds to go well for him in order to overcome the chip deficit. And then Dong-min, knowing that, can play accordingly. So I think he just has to get some chips out of the gate and then hope he can find the right time to sort things out later.
Right, I think that is exactly what you're saying is spot on, is he needs to build up just the absolute number of chips that he has to get to the point that he can start making big bets or potentially trying to bait Dong-min. And we see here in the third round, he does choose to play again, and Dong-min anticipates correctly that Hyunmin is trying to set him up as early as round three, and Dong-min correctly bets on lose here. And this, for me, I felt like was maybe a little too fancy for his own good, and maybe not if he thinks it's possible that Dong-min will consider betting lose, but I feel like it's still way too early to do anything but take the chips, especially, I believe, round three, they're still just giving one chip for a correct bet. Or for a correct play, for a correct play. I still think you have to take it.
And it's worth noting quickly here just the advantage that the draw betting globe gives to the player who wins it. Because, so, one thing you can do in the game is, if it's your turn, you can choose to play, and you can choose to have it be a draw, assuming you know what the player's card is. And so if you do that, you ensure that both players have the same chip count coming out of that round as you do coming in. So if it's your turn and you know what the card is, you can essentially eliminate that round from the game if you want to. So if you have an advantage and you think it's in my best interest to shorten the game, essentially, you can do that. However, let's say Heung-min takes the lead. He can't exercise that strategy as easily because Dong-min, having the draw betting globe, could just bet on a draw, and if he thinks that's what Heung-min is doing. And obviously, there's a kind of leveling war in play, and how likely are you to bet on the one out of the three outcomes that Heung-min actually goes for? But that's an example of how this overpowered item just like dramatically constrains one player in a way which I think does imbalance the game.
What percentage do you think Heung-min is to win this game, given the way that they set the rules up? And I know that they can't anticipate it going 8-3, but when it does go 8-3, it truly feels like Hyunmin is basically 0%, unless the draw is just absolutely ridiculous.
I don't think it's 0%, but it's...
I don't think it's far off. Do you think he's 10%?
It's tough, because so even if you took the items out of play and it was just Dong-min knows the information for these rounds, that would already be a massive advantage, and that's... You can maybe argue that that's fair given the jury-esque process, right? Or not grand jury, the actual jury. But you're meant to laugh at that. But okay, it's fine. But it's fine. We can move on. But when you also factor in the items, like, so the items by themselves or the information by themselves, both would be massive advantages. When you have both of them at the same time, and also you're a very capable player the way Dong-min is, like, that is so difficult to overcome. So, yeah, 10% might not be outrageous.
I would not be... I mean, if the line was you get paid 10-1 if you bet on Hyunmin, I think that is a sucker bet, given, you know, with the information disparity and the snow globes.
Yeah. Right. So in round four here, Hyunmin bets. He decides to shove on win, and he's right. But even then, so in that case, like he moves all in. His this is championship point, right? Like everything is on the line here. He doubles up and is still not really in contention, it seems. Like that's how far he has to climb up in order to even be in with a chance there.
Well, I mean, even if he had the chips from this point forward, like he was out of information. Like his three people drew like three of the first five sticks or whatever. There was no way he could overcome the information disparity.
And that's another stroke of bad luck, because I guess in theory you want your guaranteed information to be in the later rounds where there are more points at stake.
Of course, yeah. There are more. You get paid more chips for betting, for playing a win, for defeating the opponent. In the last couple of rounds, you get four and five chips. If you're Hyunmin, you want your people to be the last three so that you can make up 14 chips in that time. But I mean, his people were all gone before we even hit the halfway point. I would submit that there was absolutely nothing Hyunmin could have done about it. At that point forward, Dongmin ends up essentially, drawing his way through to a championship here, and Dongmin is going to be our winner of the Genius 3. And I really want to start by something that I think is just super, super fascinating, which is Season 1, Episode 1 of the Genius. We see Junsak eliminated after the Garnet heist. Jin-ho is bribed with his own Garnet to eliminate his best friend and closest ally. And we find out that the real reason is everyone was really scared of Junsak because he was so prolific with the strategy and so good at getting Jin-ho on his side and executing on it, that the voiceover said the most critical thing to learn in this game is not to bury your fangs too early. And we get Dongmin come in the fruit stand game, commanding the watermelons, "Hey, watermelons, it's loyalty, or you're going to the deathmatch." And it seemed to basically change not at all, from week to week in any capacity. What is that about? How did this happen? How did Dongmin end up winning the Genius?
I see. I don't think there's necessarily a contradiction there, right? Because Junsak was seen as very cagey, but he wasn't trying to be a leader. Right. And to the extent that he was, it wasn't a case of like, I'm going to have my team and I'm going to leave my team. You won't have a say, but you will at least be safe. And this is my team and I'm working to make sure that we win. I think it was very clear that Junsak was just kind of out for himself and doing what he wanted to do. Whereas Dongmin, for all of his many, many faults, which seem to be overlooked a lot of the time, like he was loyal to his people, right? Like he wasn't selling people out, he wasn't lying to you, he wasn't backstabbing you. If he gave you his word, it was pretty much good.
And I mean, I would also add to that, it just seemed like he was prolifically talented at a lot of these games, and that his just natural leadership and charisma was going to work really well, particularly with this cast. I think he had a really good draw here to end up with some people who, in particular, like Dr. Yan Sung didn't seem too eager to like put up a fight, or like Yan Ju and Ah Young often seemed willing to just help him out. And then once he got Hyunmin on his side, it seemed like Yu Yun's battle was just going to be uphill for the rest of the season and trying to overtake them.
We've also spoken before about the role of both age and celebrity in Korean culture as it pertains to the Genius, which a lot of it is kind of idle speculation on our part, because you know we're not fully qualified to judge either of those. But it definitely did seem like Dongmin, as this 36-year-old public figure who, yeah, it would already be very good to have the level of charisma and leadership skill that Dongmin has, but when you add that he is an older guy, or older and a guy, and also has this public profile where people are entertained by him, or at least know who he is, there's a level of deference there that someone like Hyunmin, even if he had those same natural talents, just wouldn't be able to emulate as this 20-year-old Kai student.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe there was an element, like people said about like Spencer after Cambodia, that like maybe they didn't want like the cocky young kid to like actually get his way and end up winning the season. Like, I don't think you lose the Snow Globes 8-3 and you can really make a big case that it was a jury robbery or anything like that, do you think?
No, I don't think it even makes sense to ask it in the same terms, because like in one sense you are giving someone your support, but that's just, who do I want to win? Okay, that's who I'm voting for. And there's no, I don't think there's the same level of rationalization behind it. Like, oh, I'm voting for Dongmin because he played the best game. It's just, I'm voting for Dongmin because he played the type of game that I like, or I wanted to play, or the type of game that helped me. And those are all perfectly valid reasons, and at least they're consistent reasons. Like if you say, I don't want to vote for Heumann because he didn't do anything or because he made these mistakes, those are claims that have a truth value to them. Like they're either true or they're false, and you know, maybe the evidence is there or it isn't. But if you just say, I like Dunwin, so I'm voting for Dunwin, like, yeah, can't take issue with that.
Yeah, well, I think we saw at least one person, it might have been Huizhong, if memory is serving, say Heumann seemed to play the games like selfishly, and I think he might have come across that way, whereas Dongmin really did genuinely seem to put himself out there for his team a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I think I don't want to take anything away from Heumann. Like, even though he did not win the season, I will say I was rooting for Heumann to win the season. Certainly.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, when I was watching it the first time through, I was definitely rooting for Heumann to win the season. And I don't think it would spoil anything to say when we did our Genius 4 auction draft before the season even began airing, Heumann was the person who went for the most money in both of our auction drafts.
Yeah, I think it's Heumann comes across as very precocious and. Like, you kind of want to see him get taken down a notch or, like, trip over himself at some point. He seems, like, too clever for his own good sometimes. But Dongmin is just actively arrogant, right? Like, Dongmin is the narcissist who you really want to have the classic storybook fall from grace. But it just doesn't happen in Season 3. So it's, you know, Heumann, I can see why they felt that way about Heumann, but it's a testament to Dongmin's charisma or like the unfair standards or whatever it is that logic never gets turned around on him instead.
Yeah. Well, I think that the two of them together were maybe, I mean, I certainly would say rarefied air at the absolute least about favorite duos in reality history to watch. For me, it would be these two, Chilltown from Big Brother, and then JT and Steven and Malcolm and Denise from Survivor. And I really can't think of anything else who's even close in that category for me.
Like Tony and another one of his own personalities.
Tony by himself is up there, obviously.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, if you get the Aubrey and Tony alliance, however short-lived that might be, that your Twitter cover photo is hinting at, then that will be in contention too, I suspect.
But not just my Twitter cover photo, but just as I'm doing this podcast, looking at you on Skype right now, that is my desktop wallpaper too. Is this Tony and Aubrey photo that to date this podcast, I am so desperately hoping we get to see the beginning of a month from now when we get the beginning of Survivor Game Changers. And now anyone listening to this podcast, even like a month and a half from now, is going to feel super old.
I mean, it's 3 weeks, right? Like, I had an email saying my flight leaves in like 19 days, which is terrifying. But yeah, but my desktop wallpaper is the Genius Season 4 promotional poster, just like with all of the cast arrayed in their own poses, which is really cool. But yeah, I mean, Dongmin and Heumann are an all-time great reality TV pairing for me, and I think it's hard to say they're great objectively, but I think whatever standards you might want to use to judge it, they have to be out there.
Yeah, absolutely. So Dom, I know I've said that the Genius 3, up until we ended up getting the Genius 4, was my favorite reality season of all time. Where was it for you? Is it in that pantheon?
If I had to grade it, it would get certainly an A. I don't know if it would be like A plus or like A star or in that very top tier, but it's certainly very good. And I think my appreciation for it definitely did improve on a rewatch. I think it's one where, like, so a lot of the games in Season 1 and Season 2, you kind of, I mean, it's, when you're watching for the first time, it's always a bit hard to follow some of them, but you could at least grasp what was going on. I think Season 3 is the one where you just have to rewatch it a lot of the time to just know what's going on and to appreciate the strategic complexity of a lot of the decisions that are getting made. Because the games this season are a lot more like mathematical and tactical, and I didn't, you know, my memory of this season was a lot more hazy than my memory was of like Season 2 coming out of that season when we recorded about it.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. I mean, this is, I would say, Genius 3 and Genius 4 not only just look and feel a little bit different than the first two seasons, but like I feel like there is a stark evolution in the games becoming much more math heavy, starting with the Genius 3, and that, I mean, I guess slight spoiler alert, that continues into the Genius 4 to the point that I think I really consider it two kind of separate eras of the Genius, where the Genius 3 and the Genius 4 are just like the evolution version of the Genius, I guess. So Dom, that's it. We have talked about all 48 episodes of the Genius. I know some people may not have heard or watched the Genius 4 yet, but we've already done that a year and a half ago, or whenever it was, going through. We've done a podcast for every single episode of the Genius 4. So if you haven't watched that season yet, I don't know what's wrong with you. I'm insanely jealous of you, by the way. Definitely go and do that immediately. And then find us in the blog archive talking about every single episode of that. A lot of really fun guests on for all of those episodes, or for many of those episodes. Dom, but for now, what more on Genius 3? Any other parting thoughts?
I think that covers it, unless there are like any general topics that you want to talk about.
Well, I just want to bring up, while we have covered all 48 episodes now of The Genius, I definitely hope that this isn't it. I hope that we can do more podcasting about The Genius, and maybe that will come down to you guys. And if we can gather a decent enough kind of like Genius mailbag, potentially that's something we could do, or something along those lines. I definitely do not want this to be the end of it. Certainly my favorite reality show of all time, and I'm guessing the same goes for you and many, many people listening.
Yeah, one thing I was thinking about was like a cross-franchise ranking or comparison thing with like the best Genius players, best Survivor, Big Brother, and so on. Like who is the best in the context of their own show, and who, like, if you took them and transplanted them into a different show, would fare the best, and so on. So that might be a fun thing to do.
Yeah, I've actually thought to myself as well about doing like an all-time reality draft where we draft teams from The Genius, Big Brother, and Survivor for people who have seen all of it. But that would be, I imagine, extraordinarily spoilery, and I would feel very guilty about spoiling that many people on The Genius who would probably just listen to that.
But I'm sure there would be many, many spoiler warnings both in the podcast, in the text, in the tweets about it. Like, there would be security measures taken, I'm sure, but
yeah,
I mean, that is a occupational hazard.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely for sure be up for something like that, though. I do not see it being the case that this is it, but I mean, it took us, I think we got it done in a little under 2 years, finally, to finish The Genius.
Yeah, no, there are only, you know, 4 seasons of that, so if we ended up podcasting about The West Wing or something, it would just be like 10 years later. It would take like the entire length of a presidential administration just to get through one season.
I mean, we'll see how long this current administration lasts. I don't know if it's Vegas. I actually got a message today. Vegas is apparently now at even money that Trump does not make it his full first term.
Yeah, I was saying to you off air that I think if he makes it through like the first year, then he's probably a favorite to make it through the whole term. But I mean, Nixon got reelected, right? And then got taken down less than a year later. So who knows?
Yeah. All right. Well, enough about Trump for now. Let's not sully this Genius podcast with any of that nonsense, Dom. So I think that's basically going to do it, though. You can find Dom on Twitter at DomHRV. I am at Colin Stone. You can email us for a possible Genius mailbag or whatever. DomandColin@gmail.com.
Yeah, I will say as well, like, obviously Survivor is my first love. It's the reason that we started, you know, doing this podcast, and it was the first show that really kind of drew me in to the genre, and which, you know, I'm still too much of a fan of, like, 11 seasons later, or wait, 13 seasons later now, Jesus Christ. But it's like The Genius, I think, is just in terms of the quality of the content and just how amazing the premise is and how thrilled I was to just find this and be able to, it sounds arrogant to say, like, oh, I discovered this and gave it to the world, like Christopher Columbus style. But, like, I feel like in terms of the people who have written in to say, oh, we got into The Genius because we heard your podcast about it, or we saw you tweeting about it 5 times a day for like three weeks straight, like, that we decided, okay, just to shut them up, I'll give it a chance and watch the first episode. And then they just binge-watched the entire 3 seasons in a week. Like, that kind of effect has been more pronounced with The Genius than anything else we've done before, and I'm so glad that we've got to kind of share that with so many people and you know, hear their thoughts on it and just get to experience that as a community, I suppose. Strange as that sounds.
No, I mean, they're doing The Genius Know-It-Alls, there's a Genius subreddit, it's incredible.
Yeah, the Genius is officially mainstream now, so for our next, like, hipsterish show, we need something which, like, doesn't have English subtitles, or which is, you know, really bad, or something which where the normies can't find us, basically.
Yeah, well, I do want to, before we get out of here, though, give a big shout-out, because I don't think any of that would have been possible had it not been for the people who did give it a chance originally, all the people who were there with us over 2 years ago at this point, and that were sending us tweets that I was retweeting to get more people into the show that were saying, oh my God, you guys were totally right. This is incredible. It really was the only, like, because of you guys, that is the only reason that people got into it. Obviously, I can shout my head off for weeks and months at a time, and no one will care at all, as we find out season after season with Survivor. But the genius happened because I know that we did everything we could for getting it out there, and I really appreciate everyone who's been really supportive about that. But I really do believe that it's the just word of mouth has been incredible, and the show just totally sells itself once people give it a shot.
Yeah, we can make as convincing a case as we can for why you should watch a show. The best way to become convinced is to just watch the first 10 minutes, I think, and that's all we need to do is get people's feet in the door, and after that point, the show does it by itself, and is very good at doing that.
Well, I would also say the way that you get people into watching it, and I think like the reason Rob Cisternino finally cracked and then loved it to the point that they did the Genius Know-It-Alls is for a year or so, we had people tweeting constantly about how fucking awesome the Genius is, and I love that so much. I think that's maybe like the proudest I've ever been about anything we've done at all through this whole podcasting thing. Dom. So yeah, thank you guys for all of your support, whether it's the Genius or otherwise. I think that is finally going to do it for the Genius for now and for today. So thanks once again for listening. Take care.